Thank you, Tom. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to The Way of Truth. My name is Kenny Chumley. I'm the preacher for the Gibson City Church of Christ. And this morning, we continue a series begun last Sunday on the subject of prayer. It's a pleasure to have you with us, and I'll take just a couple of minutes here to tell you about the church in Gibson. We are a group of Christians, a group of believers that meet every Sunday for worship. We're not part of any denomination. We don't have any ecclesiastical headquarters that we report to. We are just Christians in this area who try to follow Christ. And so to that end, we're going to meet this morning at 9 o'clock at our building, which is on the south side of Gibson on Route 47. We're the first building north of the Pizza Hut. And at 9 o'clock, our worship begins with Bible study for all ages. In the adult class, we are studying the life of Christ by a harmony of the Gospels, looking at all four Gospel accounts of Christ's life. At 10 o'clock, we will worship God through singing and praying, reading Scripture, eating the Lord's Supper, and preaching from the Bible. And this morning, the lesson is going to be the conclusion of a three-lesson series on Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd, I shall not want. We'll wrap that up this morning. At the conclusion of the sermon, we take a short break, and then we have a second class, short class, 20 to 30 minutes. And currently, we're in the book of Proverbs in this class. On Wednesdays at 7, we have a midweek study, classes for all ages. The adult class on Wednesdays is in the book of Revelation. We're in Revelation chapter 2 this coming Wednesday. And I would remind you of our website, GibsonCityChurchOfChrist.com, and you can go there and you can find more information about what we believe. You can find Bible study courses. We upload our Sunday bulletin every week, and we're uploading this series on prayer as well as our sermons. And so again, that's GibsonCityChurchOfChrist.com. Last week, in introducing this study of prayer, the point I was trying to make, and I'm going to continue with that point just a bit this morning, is that nothing is more natural to man than prayer. Prayer is not something alien to our soul. Man has been defined as the, quote, praying animal, unquote. And I think that's certainly true. Everywhere you find men who, given the right circumstances, are going to engage in prayer. You know, Buddhism, theoretically, is a religion without God, and yet Buddhists pray. Confucius urged people not to have much to do with the gods, but yet many today consider Confucius a god and pray to him. In one of the ancient classics, the Iliad, Homer's account of the Trojan War, Homer opens the Iliad with a prayer. And Pericles, who was the quintessential Greek, who epitomized the ideal Greek, would begin his addresses with a prayer. Demosthenes would often do the same. And I could just keep on going with examples that show that everywhere you find men praying. Men never outgrow prayer. Even in Scripture, Samson was one of the judges of Israel, and despite the fact that Samson's found in Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32, as an example of a man with the kind of faith that God's looking for, when we read the life of Samson, he doesn't seem especially godly. In many ways, he seems really unspiritual. He seems to be a hellraiser, if you will, sinful in a number of ways. But at the very end of his life, after he'd been taken captive by the Philistines and his eyes have been put out, the last thing he does, the last words on his lips are a prayer. He says, O Lord, remember me, I pray, and strengthen me, I pray thee, only this once, O God, that I may be at once avenged of the Philistines for my two eyes. And so he ended his life. He pushed the pillars there in the temple of Dagon down and brought the roof down and killed more in his death than he did in his life. No, the act of praying is the highest act of which our mind is capable. Now, atheism has no basis for prayer. And we need to understand that. Atheists may pray, but it's not because their philosophy supplies them a reason to. Because, according to the atheist, this world is nothing but a cosmic machine. All that there is to reality is matter, physical matter. And this physical matter operates according to physical law. And this law is unchangeable. There is nothing standing outside this law to alter it. It's going to just grind itself out, and the world is going to continue operating based on the physical law that governs it, and there is no one to pray to. According to the atheist, you might as well go get a rock out of your driveway and pray to it as to pray to anything else, because the atheist says there is no God. Now, that's what atheism philosophically says, that there's no basis for prayer. But I'll guarantee you, let some terrible crisis come to the life of an atheist, and that atheist is going to figure out a way to pray, even when his philosophy doesn't allow for it. Shakespeare wrote a play that was called The Tempest. And in The Tempest, there is this scene where sailors are in a boat on the sea, and this terrible storm breaks out. And the first thing that the sailors cry is, to prayers, to prayers. And so even Shakespeare, in his literature, in his portrayal of human life, recognizes the centrality of prayer during times of crisis. In the book of Psalms, there's a psalm that sort of parallels Shakespeare's scene from The Tempest, and it's Psalm 107, around verse 20 and following. You can turn there and read it. And in this psalm, a storm breaks out. Sailors, again, are in a boat on the sea, and this terrible storm breaks out, and the sailors do everything they can to bring the ship into port. They jettison cargo. They strike the sails. They tighten up the ship. They do everything they know to do, but the ship's still going down. And in verses 23 and 24, the text says, when they were at their wits' end, then they cried to the Eternal in their need. Sometimes we find ourselves at our wits' end. Sometimes we find ourselves at the end of our rope. Now, what are you going to do if you ever find yourself in that position? Just give in to despair? Just give in to fatalism? To complete futility? Well, thank goodness the Bible tells us of a God that we can pray to, a loving God, a good God, that we can turn to in times of trial and ordeal. And that's the encouragement of Scripture in Jonah chapter 2, verse 7. You know, in chapter 1 of Jonah, he ran from God. God told him to go to Nineveh, which was an Assyrian capital, and it was one of the most wicked cities ever. The Assyrians were an especially cruel and barbaric people. And Jonah is told to go preach to that city, and he didn't want to go preach to the city. And so in the first chapter, Jonah runs in the opposite direction. Had he gone to Nineveh, he would have gone east from his home. But instead, he goes down to the seashore, finds a boat heading to Tarshish, out on the western edge of known civilization. He's going to get as far as he can from Nineveh. And God sends a storm. Oddly enough, God sends a storm. And it's a storm like those mariners weren't used to seeing. And they're praying. And they come down into the belly of the boat, and they find Jonah asleep. And they can't believe that he's not helping them trying to ride out the storm. And they ask him what's going on, and he tells them that he's a prophet of God, and I'm sure that impressed him. And furthermore, he tells them that he's the reason why this storm has come. He's on the run. He's in disobedience, and he's the cause for the storm. And to his credit, he may be the only preacher that's ever said this. To his credit, he says, if you want to take care of your problem, get rid of me. And the mariners finally take his advice, and they throw him overboard, and immediately the storm stops. And so in Jonah chapter 2, after having run from God in chapter 1, in Jonah chapter 2, Jonah turns to God, because when he was thrown into the ocean, You remember the story. When he was thrown in the ocean, there is this giant fish that swallows him. And Jonah in chapter 2 talks about sitting in that fish's belly there at the bottom of the ocean. And that, to me, is one of the most horrible situations I can imagine. I mean, don't think of Pinocchio and Geppetto on a raft in Monstro's stomach like is pictured in Pinocchio. I mean, Jonah is probably in a sack, a belly, in total blackness, without any freedom of movement, probably like he's in a straitjacket, I'm guessing, digestive juices working on him. And there in that horrible situation, in chapter 2, verse 7, Jonah says, "When my soul fainted within me, I remembered the Lord." And Jonah prayed, and the Lord answered his prayer. God is there for people who are in trouble. But the danger is that we turn God into nothing but a 911 operator. You understand what I'm saying when I say that? The danger is that we only use God for emergencies, for emergency use only. The danger is that God is our last resort when all else fails, when we've tried everything we know to do and there's nothing else to do, then maybe we'll think about praying to God. And it's not right that we think of God only with a reference to our emergencies. That doesn't honor God. That's an attitude, that's an outlook of life that does disservice to the God who made you and the God who made me and the God who made this world, to only think of Him when we have some felt need, some emergency, and we go to Him hoping that He'll run an errand for us. That is an utterly selfish insult to God to treat Him in such a way. Now, what we're going to see as we go through these studies on prayer is that prayer is the greatest thing, as I said earlier, of which the mind of man is capable. Because in prayer, we are communicating with the Creator. In prayer, we are talking to God. Prayer is based upon a relationship. It's not based upon some ritual you do at church. It's not based on any sacrament that you've been taught, that just in the doing of it there is some blessing that's imparted. You know, I just don't believe in the sacramental view of religion. I don't believe in the candy bar vendor view of religion. You know, the idea that you put your money in, you pull this lever, and this candy bar comes out. That's how I understand the sacramental view of religion. I don't believe in that. But I do believe in prayer, in which we talk to God. And I do believe that God in His Word has given us the guidelines by which He will hear our prayer. The guidelines by which our prayer becomes effective. In James chapter 5, we'll be talking about this some next week. James 5 says that the fervent prayer of a righteous man is powerful. And so righteousness is one of the conditions for us to effectively talk with God. If God's going to hear our prayer, we've got to understand what He means when He says that it's the prayer of a righteous man that is powerful. And when a righteous man prays, there is indeed power that is unleashed. In prayer, there is real power to change the world. Through prayer, believers can shape the future. Some people have an idea of prayer that the only good that comes from it is subjective, that maybe by praying you'll just feel better, and so that's reason enough to pray. Well, I just don't believe that. I don't deny that you may not feel better after prayer, but I believe there's objective power, that by our communicating with God, following the guidelines of life that He's given us, that our prayer can be one of the most powerful, effective, dynamic things that we ever do. And next week, we're going to start looking at these principles of communication that are involved in talking to God. And I hope you'll try to be with us next week as we continue this study. My time's up, and so let me thank you for listening today. I do hope you have a good week, and I look forward to being with you again next Sunday at 8 o'clock right here on The Way of Truth.